You always do that.
I know.
I know.
It just comes out.
Yesterday we talked about this Anderson case for a long time.
Boy, did you talk about that yesterday.
I know we did, but I'm not going to let it go today because I was disturbed. And the more I think about this, the more disturbing this whole issue is to me. It takes in so much in our city. We're going to start our conversation today with Professor Dave Berkman, who is a professor of mass communications at UWM, and he has a column that's going to appear tomorrow in The Shepherd, which deals with this story, which he says is a profound example of racism. And I think that he's going to spark more than a few phone calls, and we are going to continue some of this discussion today.
It's the only thing that's going on in this town. That's all that people are talking about.
It just has so many angles
sure
to
does.
It.
Okay,
so we'll talk about that.
With Kathleen after the news and weather.
WTMJ Weather Center forecast. I'm meteorologist Barbara Conrad.
WTMJ News Time is 10:07. Kathleen Dunn is next. I'm Richard Cantu, and you're in touch with Milwaukee and the world at your information station, AM 620 WTMJ.
Kids to get to school.
News Radio, AM 620, WTMJ. Now, a conversation with Kathleen Dunn on your information station, AM 620, WTMJ.
Good morning to you. It is Tuesday, the 28th of April, and this is midday on AM 620 WTMJ. I'm Kathleen Dunn. Even though we reacted to this Barbara Jesse Anderson story at some length on yesterday's program and had some profoundly interesting phone calls, I've still been troubled by all of the aspects of this case, and I know that many of you listening are still troubled by many of the aspects of this case. I didn't exactly know what to do with the show today, whether to drop this story, whether we ought to continue with more discussion of this story, and I thought that we would start our program with a little more discussion of this story. Some of the aspects that have been troubling to me and that came up again in yesterday's program, the willingness in Milwaukee to believe that black youths may have committed this incredible act of violence, the fact that anybody could commit this kind of violence, the fact that this kind of violence is in our society, the attention that this case has received, the children who will have to be living with the horror of this all of their lives, the Anderson children. Yesterday during our discussion, I noticed that there were calls coming in from suburban areas, people expressing a fear to be in the city, calls coming in from the black community expressing anger that we had stereotyped images of black youth in our society. And I wanted to continue this discussion today because I think that it brings in so many profound issues that Milwaukee is dealing with right now, but I didn't know exactly what direction we should take. And then last night I had a chance to hear some of Professor Dave Berkman's comments. His column in tomorrow's newspaper, The Shepherd, is going to deal with the Anderson story, which he says is a profound example of racism, the way the story was treated, and we will hear that column and talk with him. He also, in the column, talks about how white society views the relative worth of white life and black life. And this is a part, I think, of the story that I would like for us to focus on some during our conversation this morning. Professor Berkman is a professor in the Department of Mass Communication at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. And I asked him to join us on our program. He will read the column, and I'm sure it's going to spark more than a few phone calls. We will probably move into some other subjects later on our show, but let's start with this and see how it goes, okay? Tony Frank is our producer. Tony will be answering phone calls. She'll get you on hold, and we'll be with you on the air very shortly. Our phone number today, as always, is 799-1234, 799-1234, for you to join our conversation. And Professor Dave Berkman joining us now on our midday program, professor of mass communication at UWM, and has a column that I'm sure is going to spark some reaction from you that will appear in The Shepherd, which you'll find at your local newsstand tomorrow. Dave, thank you very much for being with us today.
Good to join you.
I thought it would be good if you would just start, if you don't mind giving us a preview of the column, if you'd start with reading of the column, which I've had a chance to hear, and I'm sure it's going to spark more than a bit of reaction.
OK. Okay, it's titled, it's my regular weekly media commentary, and this one is titled, White Life, Black Life, and Relative Worth. In a Boston-like scenario, it's reported that a white couple from Cedarburg has been stabbed by two black males near a restaurant frequented by white folks across from a mall where mainly white folks shop. The nearby white community, the mall's white shoppers, and the victim's white friends and co-workers, the local news anchors tell us, are appalled. After all, the implicit message resounds, since we are white people and this is a white neighborhood, it is not right that this should be happening to us. By their reactions, Vince, Marty Burns, even Carol, seem to concur. More than 100 blacks a year are killed in Milwaukee's inner city. Each murder is reported more or less perfunctorily. Seldom is there a supporting story reporting the shock of residents and colleagues, or stories in which black folks protest it shouldn't be happening in their neighborhoods or to them. Here, too, the implicit message, in these cases by omission, is equally clear. Those are black folks. It happened in a black neighborhood. Therefore, it's to be expected. In other words, our Milwaukee media tell us, loss of black life through acts of violence is to be accepted as the norm. Loss of white life, given the natural right of white people by virtue of their whiteness, always to be safe, is never acceptable. But such an acceptance by white media that brutalization of whites is so infinitely more of a travesty than similar crimes committed against blacks constitutes as profound an example of racism as can be conceived. For most of us who are white, such a contention will be difficult to understand. No, I am not excusing the killing of whites. For those who are black, the meaning is clear. Black life has intrinsically less worth than white. Make no mistake about it, that was the message in last week's dwelling attention and incredulous shock by our local media, unequaled in my recollection when blacks have been killed, in their reporting of a knife attack on Barbara and Jesse Anderson. We have seen this lesser value accorded black and other non-Caucasian life reflected and reinforced in the manner in which our media treat a host of other issues. I find myself particularly struck by the accepting manner in which the periodic studies showing the significantly shorter lifespans for blacks and Native Americans and those documenting third world black infant mortality rates in urban central cities are reported. And I have yet to see anything on the legislative effort sweeping the country to deprive additional children born to welfare mothers of an increase in their aid, which would provide the food needed for these children to sustain life, labeled the murder in which such starvation and malnutrition would result. When a Mau-Mauing Mike McGee threatens to murder whites, the outrage and sanctimony explode. When overwhelmingly white legislators enact, not merely threaten, legislation which cannot but result in the death of black babies, the most frequent reaction is praise. One of the truly sad consequences of oppression is the degree to which the oppressed come to accept the devaluating beliefs about themselves which their oppressors propound. Look at how many women accept that men really are more qualified than women to exercise important responsibilities in business and government, or how many, it was a majority, accepted male-propounded beliefs that an Anita Hill was a lover scorned, or that a Desiree Washington should have accepted her fate when she accompanied Mike Tyson to his hotel room at 2 a.m. Do any of you recall an especially poignant episode of Sanford and Son about Fred Sanford's horrified reaction when he found that the dentist who was to provide the emergency dental care he suddenly required was black? So pernicious are beliefs about black inferiority was the message of this black-authored script that even the Afro-American Fred Sanford could not believe a black dentist was qualified. Most nefarious, as such black commentators as Jesse Jackson have pointed out, among the white propounded beliefs about their lesser worth which so many blacks have come to accept, is that black life indeed is less valuable. Such belief is a major factor in what is becoming the slaughter of black males by other black males. It's why Michael Drain became the unintended murder victim in a black youth gang shootout 2 days after the Anderson stabbings. If you don't recognize innocent victim Michael Drain's name, but did recall the name of the Andersons, you might want to ask yourselves why.
Mm-hmm. It's a profound question with which to answer that. I'm sure most people will say, who was Michael Drain?
Not only most people. Yesterday I had a chance to talk with three anchors at broadcast operations and one reporter for a daily paper, and I asked that question to each of those very knowledgeable news people. Not one of them knew.
Mm-hmm. There were, we did a show on this yesterday, Dave, and there were people, it just brought up so many issues. I tend to agree with you about this, and I'm appalled 2 days after the Anderson case. There were drive-by shootings in the inner city. I'm appalled that, and it was buried in the newspaper and made maybe the beginning of newscasts, and then this issue was dropped. I don't know exactly what's creating this, except that maybe we have become so numb to violence in some parts of our society that we do sort of take it for granted, that we perpetuate these stereotypes about what life is like in a city, that people in that part of the city just have to put up with this kind of violence, that these kind of people do this kind of thing. We had calls from suburban people on this show yesterday who said that they wouldn't even drive in the inner city because they felt that they would be a victim of crime. And I think that your point is interesting, that we may accept what the dominant beliefs are about ourselves, so black-on-black crime is something that we have to deal with.
Well, I would take one exception to what you just said. I don't think we've become numbed to the problem of violence. We certainly aren't numbed to it when it happens to white folks.
Right, or
it's
when
the differential way that we treat this that is indicative of a racism that is absolutely pervasive in contemporary society. I would point out to you that in your own medium right now of radio, the hottest phenomenon in this town is a guy who broadcasts skinhead racist rhetoric for 3 hours every afternoon, and his show has jumped from 11th to 4th place. And the media treat him as cute, rather than as the insightful threat which he is. I'd also point out, for example, that your own sister station for a long time was broadcasting a spot in which a very white-breaded blonde lady is shown saying it's safe for her and her children to listen to because it doesn't play rap. And the implicit message there is you don't have to worry about being polluted by the music associated with the most dreaded life form on earth, the young black male, will ever modulate their carrier waves.
There were a lot of people in the black community who called in yesterday who were concerned about the stereotypes that were perpetuated by this Anderson case. And I spent some of this morning going through all of the newspapers of last week, Dave, and was amazed to read the initial accounts of this and how the white couple from Cedarburg were written about. And
well, look at this morning's Sentinel.
Yeah.
It's front page, handcuffed suspect, views open casket, gentle hope voiced at victims' funerals. Those are two stories. We flip over to page 4. Policy doesn't have accidental death clause. Handcuffed suspect views open cancer, a casket of his wife. Jesse Anderson's family expresses support for him. Restaurant to help victims' children. Young Anderson was just another kid. Friend sure Anderson is innocent. Victims' childhood neighbors recall lovely young girl. In other words, two full pages about this victim, and nobody knows who Michael Drain's name is.
Yeah.
30-year-old male.
Yeah. Our number is 799-1234. Our phone lines are absolutely jammed, and we will be taking phone calls. 799-1234 is our number, 799-1234. Joining our conversation this morning is Professor Dave Berkman, who is a professor of mass communications at UWM and also writes a column for The Shepherd. His column tomorrow is on white life, black life, relative worth, which centers on the way that this Anderson story was covered. And we're going to start our phone calls with Al. Hi, Al. You're on WTMJ. Go right ahead.
Hi. I just wanted to make a comment that I'm certainly, I'm not one to stereotype any black person, but when something comes out in the paper and on the radio that two black men stabbed this fellow and his wife, Anderson, I mean, what are you to believe? It would be the same if a black couple, the man came in the restaurant and said, two white guys jumped me and stabbed me. Well, you're going to believe it right away.
I would agree with you completely. I don't think the media had any choice but to report what Jesse Anderson stated, so that and black was important to that identification. I do not fault the media for stating that it was a blacks. My concern is with what has been the ancillary, what newspaper terms is called the sidebar coverage. This immediately happens to this nice white blonde lady from Cedarburg, not from somewhere around North Avenue. Therefore, we're going to send out four news crews to find out what a sweet, loving couple they are. Somehow, when it happens to nice, white, blonde people from Cedarburg, that is more of a tragedy than when it happens to a Michael Drain or any other anonymous blacks who are killed.
Mm-hmm.
People that I know, and I associate with black and white, but most of them feel bad when a black 14-year-old gets killed by somebody driving by in a car. I mean, they feel bad about it. I mean, it isn't that white people aren't concerned about it. They are. And they feel bad about it. But what are we going to do? I mean, you can't...
Yet it's the same black...
You can't write it to the newspaper, I feel so bad. I mean, or...
Yet it's the same white people who are heaping praise, calling on our legislature... when it considers legislation that would deprive additional monies, which, by the way, in Wisconsin, the most generous of states, is $2.66 a day, not much to party on, that would prevent black babies from dying of malnutrition. We cheer that. I've heard these sentiments expressed over and over again on local radio call-in shows from what are white people. Well, if we devalue black infant life, how much less worth do we accord to the life of white adults? I have yet to hear anybody point out that those kinds of legislation, which have now been enacted in 18 states, result in murder. But when Mike McGee, playing games, it's called mau-mauing, threatens to shoot white people, we are appalled. We cheer black legislatures who don't threaten but actually legislate to murder black babies.
We need to break for some announcements. Al, thanks for the call. Dave, please stay with us. Our phone number is 799-1234, 799-1234. And joining our conversation is Professor Dave Berkman from the Department of Mass Communications at UWM. We're continuing at the risk of overdoing this story, but I don't think that we're overdoing this story because of all that it entails. We're continuing some of yesterday's conversation about how the press treated the Barbara Jesse Anderson story, about how the press treats black deaths in due to violence in this city, whether or not there is a difference in the way we value the life of people who are white and people who are black, the empathy that we have, and I think that there's a lot of truth in this, that those people who are white could feel this profound empathy for the Andersons and also felt that they could be victims, perhaps, of this kind of violence because of that story, versus the empathy that we have for black victims of crime. A lot of that came up in discussion of this story yesterday, and we thought we would continue some of that today. Our phone number is...
Denise.
Get real advantages for the real world at your local...
Past 10, and you're listening to Midday. Professor Dave Berkman is joining us for the first part of our program today. He is professor of mass communication at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, and he is also a columnist for The Shepherd, and started our program by reading tomorrow's column, which will appear in The Shepherd, White Life, Black Life, Relative Worth, and how the Jesse Barbara Anderson story highlights all of that in our city. Our phone number is 799-1234, 799-1234 for you to join us. And let's go to Cherise next. Hi, Cherise, you're on WTMJ.
Hi.
Hi.
Yeah, I'm a student at UWM. I'm an adult continuing student at UWM. And I just want to say that I totally and completely agree with what the professor is saying. And a lot of things that... even about the women being discriminated against, you know, the little part he had in there. But my first reaction to the murder was that it was horrible that what happened to both the Andersons, you know. But when they kept talking about it, I said, well, people in the inner city are killed every day. And they're not going on and on about the black people that are killed every day in the inner city. But because these people were white... And it's true. You know, Milwaukee is a very racist city. And I just think I'm thankful that UWM has a program here that's called Cultural Diversity. And in order to graduate from UWM, you have to take a cultural diversity class. And I'm thankful for the university for requiring that. And I just think that people need to be educated more and more, more columns, more books, more everything, because Milwaukee is a very racist city.
And we need to have, Charisse, I think, the same sense of outrage about, we have record numbers of homicide in Milwaukee. I mean, don't we feel empathy for all of those lives? Don't we? We don't focus the same kind of attention, I don't think, on very, very significant problems that affect our minority community. I mean, what's government doing about it? What are any of us doing about this? It's as though we just sort of let it happen, and we don't focus much media attention on it. We don't try to come up with solutions. It's as though we accept what's going on, which is horrible.
Yeah, it is horrible, but it's just like the professor says. It's because it's not happening to white folks. If it starts happening to white folks, maybe then the government will take notice.
Yeah, what do you think about that, Dave?
24 years ago, the Kerner Commission issued, the presidential commission that Johnson appointed, issued a report that said, we are on the road to becoming two separate and distinct mm-hmm. Americas. We have not progressed, we have regressed. We are probably now back where we were in the mid to late 50s, and it is getting worse. Look, we don't point out how this is exploited in political campaigns. Let me give you a perfect example.
Can you hold on that, and let me just get news headlines and be back with the example?
Was that none of the local media picked this up.
Well,
and
David,
pointed out what it was.
It's hard to find a politician these days who's not bashing the welfare recipients. I mean, almost all day, and as I recall, in
are you indicating acceptance of it? Why aren't we pointing this?
I agree with you, but there was only one candidate that I can recall in the whole county executive race that had some compassion for welfare people. Everybody was saying, we got to change this system. We got to have a two-tier system. The benefits are too much. Every politician took that up as a campaign theme, except for Czarnecki.
Why do we get so upset that some black may be ripping us off for $100 a week, a couple of $100 a month, which couldn't come close if every black on welfare were cheating, to what the SNL debacle is costing us? The outside estimates are now that it will run $1 trillion. That we spend $300 billion a year on defense against a Soviet Union that is no longer a threat. But people in Milwaukee sit there and fester over the fact that those black women are making all those babies to rip us white taxpayers off. Why have news media, whose purpose for existing is to educate, to inform, to enlighten, why do they not only passively permit this kind of belief, which is absolutely false, to take hold, but in the case of at least one of your competitors, actually encourage it with 7 hours a day of skinhead racist call-in programming?
Charisse, thank you very much
for
your call.
Thanks a lot, Professor.
Yeah.
Thank you.
799-1234. Number Jerry, you're on WTMJ. Hi.
Isn't the good senator, professor getting...
The good senator?
A little bit there.
Is he...
Well, he sounded like a politician in a way.
Never run for anything.
Well, thank God.
Oh, okay.
You take up every cause there is that's on the other side, don't you? You don't have any faith at all in any of the white people at all, do you?
Well, I'm a white person, I am. Faith in a lot of people that I know, most of my contacts, associates, colleagues are white, and I know a lot of neat white people. I don't know why you'd say something like that.
Well, because you run white people down at every turn of the road. I'm going to tell you something. Most of the people I know feel terrible whenever anyone gets killed, whether it's black or white or whatever race it is. But you play the racist card at every turn of the road. You got to remember that.
What did I say that was racist? Would you be specific?
Do what?
What? Could you give me a specific example of anything I have said that is reverse racism?
You were saying that that if it was black people, we don't pay any attention to it.
Have you seen any black murder?
Of course I have.
Kind of coverage?
And we worry about it all the time. But I've got to tell you, there's more murder that goes on in the inner city, the proportionate, than any other part of the city.
Of course.
And so, therefore, it eventually does, you know, you can, if there's so much of it going on, eventually it isn't going to be the big news story that it would be if it's at a place that, where there's never a murder going on.
But why then do we give so much more attention? I mentioned this name, Michael Drain, which I suspect you, like most people, had never heard of. He was killed, absolutely innocent. He was sitting on his porch. He was killed, 30-year-old black man, the very night Barbara Anderson died.
And I heard about it, and I felt terrible about it. But that happens every day over there. And so, you know, it's just one after the other after the other. Up in that area where she was killed, Mrs. Anderson, it never happens. Of course it's going to be a bigger story, because it never happens over there.
You're not going to accept what I'm saying, sir, but believe me, what you're saying is making my point.
Jerry, thank you for your call. Let me just follow up, though, on some of what Jerry has said. He does have a point, I think, Dave, in that this particular part of the city, where hundreds of thousands of people go every day, For all of a sudden, people could identify with the possibility of violence in their lives, I think, because it happened in the Northridge area, and people thought, ooh, boy, am I safe in this particular part. And because of the unprovoked nature of this, the incredible violence, there was no robbery, there was no motive. It was a huge mystery. So it was bound to make news because of, A, where it was, the number of people who go there, and B, the circumstances surrounding this particular crime.
But that's exactly what you're saying is exactly what I'm saying. If it happens in a white community, loss of white life, given the natural right of white people by virtue of their whiteness always to be safe, is never acceptable. Implicit in what you're saying is it is so common, and there's no argument with that. Urban crime is essentially a black phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
It is far worse when it happens to white folks like us. That's the implicit message in arguing like that.
No, I'm not saying that it's far worse. I'm saying that that's the reason that the press made more of the story.
Well, I'm saying the press, and we're all part of the press.
Don't ever say that I said it was much worse, Dave, because that's not my thought at all. Not a bit. It couldn't be farther from the truth.
Why the press did it is implicitly that it should not be happening at Northridge. It should be happening at Capitol Court. You know, comparative shopping.
yesterday.
Uh-huh.
And what she
said
Benadryl, to me,
recommended by more doctors, trusted by people with allergies. Use as directed.
You're listening to Midday on AM Sick. Bring us here. Whatever form that takes in Wisconsin, we kind of miss it usually, don't we? But you get a couple days here and there. We're talking this part of our Midday program, at the risk of overdoing this topic, it's just that I, you know, we had so many phone calls yesterday that came in that I think pointed to divisions in our city and pointed to difficulties people are having in understanding each other, and it all centers on the Barbara Jesse Anderson story. And we covered mostly racial aspects of this case yesterday. There are, of course, many other aspects of this case that are deeply troubling to me. Domestic violence, the children who will have to bear this. We'll move into those aspects a little bit later on. But today, at least for the first part of our program, we are talking with Professor Dave Berkman. And he is professor of mass communications at UWM. He writes a column for The Shepherd. Tomorrow's column is going to deal with white life, black life, relative worth, and he is looking at how the press has treated this particular story, how we treat violence, death of blacks from violence in our society, and if there are differences here, and how all of this may affect how blacks view themselves. And that's what we're talking about this part of our show. 799-1234 is our number. 799-1234. And let's take a phone call from Ken, who's been waiting for a while. Ken, thanks for waiting. You're on WTMJ. Hi.
Good morning. I'm just going to address this Anderson incident briefly because I think other people have talked a lot about it. Again, though, it's one of those old things where when a dog bites a man, it isn't news. When a man bites a dog, it is. If it would have been a black couple at TGI Fridays that got shot, there would have been just as much coverage, I believe, as the coverage with the Andersons. I don't think there's any question about that.
Go ahead.
Shootings in the inner city are status quo. They happen every day. You don't hear, there aren't drive-by shootings in Hales Corners or Fox Point or Shorewood. And if there were, it would be news. There are every day, and I'm a city person. I'm not a suburbanite by any stretch of the imagination. It's just a question of newsworthiness. My point might be a little bit more toward, I think Mr. Berkman really exaggerates his points. For example, I saw the ad that used to run about the station that the woman said she liked it because they didn't play rap. She made no mention about being safe for somebody to listen to. She simply said, I like it because they don't play rap.
I'm talking about the implicit message there, and I have no doubt, and others commented on that. In fact, somebody commented, one of the writers for one of the journal company publications made the same point. That was the implicit message. Look, it is no longer the 1940s. We don't talk about niggers anymore. We now deal in racial code. Welfare mothers means black welfare mothers. Urban crime means black. Get tough on criminals means lock up them black folks.
I would disagree. I mean, if I were to talk to my friends, they'd say, I don't want to listen to a station that plays rap because I find the music obnoxious and vulgar. It has nothing to do with whether it's a black man doing it or Vanilla Ice.
Well, I would disagree on that.
Let's talk a little bit more about putting that couple, a black couple at Northridge, and having the same incident take place and have the black couple say there were two, the black man in this case say, that there were two white kids who fled the scene. How do you think the press would have written that story, reacted to that story?
Okay, I think where I disagree with some people in the black community is I have no problem with the way the story about the murder per se was covered. I don't think the media had any choice once Anderson had made that statement, which is now allegedly untrue, about being attacked by black males. I think it should have gotten, and it merited the coverage it got. It is not the core story about the attack in Northridge, without question, unusual. It is the sidebar coverage that has concerned me. It is what it is, those 8 or 9 headlines that I just read you from this morning's Sentinel, all about these people and their lifestyles. We did not see that with Michael Drain or with whoever was else may have been killed in the black community last week. That is what bothers me, not the core coverage of the murder.
Right. Do you think we would have had the sidebar stories had this couple, you know, lived in the inner city? Had it been a black couple and they had lived in the inner city in Milwaukee?
There might have been one.
There might have been one.
Yeah.
Kathleen, one other quick point.
Sure, Ken.
Kirkman's been talking all morning about the welfare reform issue. It's a simple issue. Both white and black people on welfare be affected. I think it's a very simple message. Responsible people don't have children if they can't afford them.
But the babies have no responsibility, to say to them that because of the irresponsibility of a parent that this child should now be starved, and that is exactly what we're talking about here, to me is unconscionable.
Well, it's not my problem, let's put it that way.
Oh, well, then I think, sir, you have really made my point.
I think, you know, you exaggerate far too much, especially about skinhead racist pro. I've never seen a radio station in Milwaukee that has skinhead racist programming.
All right, I don't want to talk about other radio stations,
yes,
all right?
Okay.
So let's go to other phone calls. Ken, thank you very much for the call. 799-1234 is our number, 799-1234. Tom, you're on WTMJ. Hi.
I'd like to ask the good professor a question. Does he feel that the 900 numbers exploit women in the Shepherd?
Yes, I do.
Well, how can you possibly lend your name to the publication?
I don't have to approve everything that they do. I also believe that idiots who get off on phoning 900 numbers should have the choice to do that.
Right, and I don't want to talk about 900 numbers either. Let's stick to the issue of the day, if we could, please. Dave, you're on WTMJ. Hi.
Yes, I'm a white Anglo-Saxon Protestant, I guess, unfortunately, here. I live in a mixed racial neighborhood, black and white. We've taken a straw poll among us in the neighborhood, and we have got to agree that we are very angry at hearing the likes of the professor label our city and our community as racist. I, as an individual, have worked all my life in behalf of black equality and black causes. I marched with Father Grappi, and I worked in the suburbs and in the city of Milwaukee toward open housing and fair treatment for blacks in every aspect of our cultural life. I am angry when this man goes on the air and when his counterparts on other radio stations, black talk show hosts or white ones, label me with the same broad brush, because I am white, as a racist. This is something that is inciting the problem of racism. It is feeding black and white paranoia. We attack the welfare system because it tends to perpetuate both black and white poverty. We want it to be corrected and to become a constructive program.
But you don't do it by starving
that
black children.
Stops. We don't expect or want or desire.
So there are also more white people on welfare than black people on welfare.
Yeah,
so
but that's almost a gratuitous thing, Kathleen. We know that when they talk about the welfare problem today in urban settings, they're talking about black welfare.
But don't you see, Professor, that by painting the white community with the same broad brush you do, you practice the very thing that you are accusing us of practicing.
The problem with any
racism, I'm sorry, let me please make my point. You are practicing racism, sir, because what is racism? Racism says that because there is one bad black, all blacks are bad.
Mm-hmm.
You are saying that because one white man had the stupid judgment to decide to accuse two imagined black individuals of making the attack in order to provide an excuse for his own misdeed. You are saying, in effect, that I am a part of that same activity, that I am a part of that same misdeed.
Okay, absolutely not. Can I respond? Because I think you've made the point pretty clearly. May I respond? Like all generalizations, obviously, admits of exceptions. I mean, I'm white myself, obviously. The fact is that 24 years after Father Grappi, 22 years, whatever it is, I wasn't in town in those days, led those demonstrations, we remain, according to the University of Chicago, one of the six hyper-segregated cities in this country. Now, obviously not all whites are racist. But to deny the degree to which racism has begun to fester, increase in the white population, to deny the degree to which racism exists among large numbers of white, not you, not me, to deny that, I would suggest, is at best naive, at worst untrue. The fact of the matter is that the majority of white America now manifests deeply held racist beliefs about inferiority of black people. But every public opinion poll is showing how that is increasing.
But why do you lay the entire responsibility for racism and for inability of some parts of our population to get along on a racist basis?
Because I'm going to lay less blame on the people who are the victims than the people who are victimizing. I think implicit in what you're saying is we all have an even shot at birth. And the fact of the matter is, if our skin is darker,
I'm
we do not have an even shot.
We all have an even responsibility, sir. I don't expect any more from my black neighbors than they expect from me. Namely, that
it's
we live
easier for you to meet your
other
responsibilities than your black neighbors.
We need to
excuse
break
me, sir.
It's easier to meet your responsibility than for your black many of your black neighbors.
We need to break at this point. Thank you very much for your call, Dave, and Professor Dave Bergman. Thank you very much for being with us too.
Enjoyed it very much.
All right.